CliffCentral.com. We are live.
Good morning. It is Thursday morning, CliffCentral.com, and it's definitely chillier every single time. It's also darker every single time. This morning we're joined by Pumi Mashiko, who's there in all of her glory, and Michael Flax, who makes a guest starring return appearance on the Gareth Cliff Show this morning. Thank you for joining us. If you've woken up especially...
I'm not going to lie to you.
You're not going to lie about what, Pums?
I'm not going to lie to you. It was hard getting out of my warm bed this morning.
Isn't it the worst, especially in winter? I mean, it sounds so obvious, and I don't want us to sit here and complain about it for like an hour on the show, but it's amazing.
It's not a complaint. It's just the truth.
It is.
It
hurts.
I've had to do some room upgrades just to handle the cold. So I went and I bought a carpet. I now am official carpet owner. I don't know if you guys remember your first carpet, but I do.
Yes.
So now I have a carpet to try and keep the warmth in.
What did you have on the floor before that? Just tiles?
No, it's like, you know that like fake laminated wood?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that. And I needed something like more to insulate the room. So I upgraded and got a little carpet.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite nice getting out of bed onto a carpet. I'm not going to lie. I feel like I'm adulting.
You put your feet onto a cold floor after being in the bed. It's so much worse. So I hear you. Even if you don't have one of those fancy or expensive underfloor heating arrangements that we've spoken about on the show before. I mean.
Oh, that kills electricity.
It eats it up like a machine.
Also, the walk from the bathroom after a shower to the room was unpleasant. What I got, I didn't even know it existed, but it's called a bathrobe. So it's a robe for the bathroom.
Yes, you've never heard of that before.
No, I've got a normal robe.
Yeah.
This is literally like a towel in the form of a robe, and you just put it on, and it makes the walk a bit more pleasant.
How old are you now?
Well, you guys have these.
Yeah. So how old are you now? I mean, like you only got to this age before you discovered bathrobes.
Just so we're on the same page. Mm. I'm talking about a robe that's just for like the bathroom, not one you wear around the house and it's like cozy and stuff.
Yes, we know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like it's made out of the same fabric as a towel would be.
It's toweling material.
Yeah, this is amazing. This thing, this incredible invention that has been, I don't know, fairly, it's fairly like well known. But this is what I love about Flax is he discovers these things as if they, and I mean it's, you take such pleasure in discovering these things, which is so great because those of us who take it for granted, we're like, yeah, we know what you mean. And you're like, no, but it's so amazing. And it really is. Like a bathrobe is a...
I don't think a lot of people know about this.
I'm telling you.
Maybe there's a story to how you discovered this.
I bought the carpet, and then while I was walking, I saw tinier robes than normal robes. And then it said bathroom robe. And then I was very intrigued. And then my mother explained to me how this is when you get out of the shower to keep you warm. It's like instead of a towel, and you can walk to the room. And it was a problem I was facing at the time. And I thought, quick solution. And then I used it for the first time Monday night. Game changer.
Listen, I'm thrilled for you because it is exciting. Listen, when you discover something like this, it can change your life. And Flax, I'm so happy. Like, it's the small things. It's never the big ones that make your life that much better in an enormous way. I mean, like, now, just having that carpet to put your feet on when you get out of bed so it's not cold and putting that bathrobe on to go from the bathroom to the bedroom, that's just fantastic. I for one, am very happy for you, even if you did just discover it and Pumi and I are looking at you askance right now. So
It's not askance. It's not askance. Okay. It's just it's a happy look for you.
Another thing that I recently bought was usually I wash my face and I'll just use my towel for the bathroom. I bought the smaller version of the towel just for the face. Also, makes my life a lot more pleasant because now I'm moisturizing in the morning and washing my face twice a day.
Very good. Awesome.
See? These little upgrades that make you more adult, if that makes sense.
Superb. Well done. Pums, have you got any winter arrangements that you've put into play suddenly? Like those slippers that you buy with the sheep's wool in the inside? You know which ones I mean.
Dude, I'm about to buy those for the office. My new office is so nice. Cold.
Get a carpet.
There's
a carpet.
Are you going in every single day now, or are you still doing like some days at home?
No, I'm going in every single day, and okay. Let me tell you something. The levels of productivity are so much higher, actually.
Really?
In an office and around everybody. It has been, and I've actually had like some 18-hour days in the past like 2 weeks. And they don't feel, so the 18-hour day does not feel as gruesome as it does when you're at home. Because when you're at home, there's like lots of stuff, you know, there's the fridge, there's the couch.
Right.
But when you're at the office, you know, you're just working hard. So I'm back in the office full time.
I'm proud of you. I'm not there yet, but I'll get there soon because we're pretty much there like three days a week now, and it'll be four soon. Tracy says we've all got to toughen up. She says, I have underfloor heating, a bathrobe, etc., but I bath and walk to my bedroom and get dressed. All right, Tracy, no need to boast.
That's how you get flu, from hot to cold.
Right. That's what your mom told you, right, when you were little. That's true.
Yeah.
Right.
And don't go out with wet hair.
No.
I even bought a hairdryer. First hairdryer I've ever owned.
Very good.
It was only like $100. I got like a little tiny 1,000-watt one. No, I don't need anything.
Do you know that this is going to sound like I'm in the flex situation, but do you know that I've never used a hairdryer ever in my life?
So I never used to see the value in it until I bought one.
Yeah.
And it's quite nice to dry your hair, and then like straight away you have dry hair and you go outside. I used to dry it in the sun during summer and just go outside for 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know, well, like that's all. I just towel dry my hair in the mornings. That's what I do when I hop out of the shower, and you know, it's always served me well. But it's colder in the winter, that too. So I want us to move on to something though, because I got a really interesting email yesterday from Tato, who was commenting on some of the stuff we were talking about with regard to the Zulu royal house. And I thought, Pums, this is something you might have some insights to share with us on as well. So Tato sent this long email about how he was listening to the show. He thought he'd just explain a few things because, you know, I'm interested in this stuff, but I don't know all the answers. And someone called Jane actually sent us an email as well. Not Jane Malachi, but this Jane who's worked with like the Rural Development Department in KZN, has worked with some of the members of the royal family in KwaZulu-Natal. And she was saying, you know, it's really interesting. And so Tato says this. He said, not sure how accurate this is, but it's what I've learned from books that have been written and from the Zulu I'm translating into English as part of my job. Also, all the king's wives are referred to as Ntlovukazi, which means queen. But Inkosi is the king. Nkosikazi is usually the main queen. Right, Pumps? You agree so far? She's the main queen because she doesn't belong to the king but to the Zulu nation, and so do her children. Her lobola is paid for by them and not the king. Usually the firstborn son takes over, but that is not set in stone. The king is the one who chooses his successor. It is believed that he will know which one of his sons would be the best suited for the role. It happened in the past with tribes like the Kunu tribe, where the king chose a successor from the Ndlovukazi, and then there was a whole war, and the tribe ends up splitting. When the king dies, though, the royal council does meet to discuss who the successor is, but it is just a formality. So that I thought was pretty interesting. I didn't know that. In today's time, the king leaves a will, then the council meeting is really just for show. There's no disputing that the rightful king should be one of the sons of the Nkosikazi, which is the main queen. If anyone else is trying to claim the throne, they're willing and should get over themselves. That's according to Tato now. In terms of the new king being whisked away, this could be symbolic because in the past, the younger prince might manage to influence things and kill his brother. But these days, it's more like a symbol. It's more of a symbolic thing. If the mother was poisoned, I wouldn't be surprised if someone did try something with the younger and newer monarch. I do agree that there should be a neater transfer of power in terms of things being done in the name of tradition. And that's all from Tato. So I thought that was really interesting. Just because this is still confusing to a lot of people, even to people who are Zulu. But I appreciate the email, Tato, and thanks for clarifying some of that stuff for us. I mean, is there anything in there that you thought needed...
That's really cool.
Yeah, is there anything in there that you thought needed further clarification, Pums? Because, I mean, we're interested in getting this right.
So I was the whisked away being symbolic, I wasn't too sure about that. Did it look, you know, as has been widely reported now, even Zwelithini had to hide in his earlier years.
But in his case, it was because there was an actual danger.
I have an echo again, Gareth. Will you just check on that? I don't know if everybody else has
the echo. It sounds fine on our side, Pums. So I think it's
yeah, okay. I can also hear.
All right. You can hear an echo as well, Flax?
No. It's perfect on my end. I'm just confused by that cup you just lifted. It was
like
it wasn't an espresso shot, but it wasn't a normal size cup.
So yeah, it's just bigger than an espresso size mug, and it's like cortado size. So what I do is I make a little. It's kind of like it's like a mini cappuccino almost. I put some milk in, warm that up, then froth it. And
it's
then
like between a small and a medium.
Perfect. That's the whole thing.
You can't buy those here.
No,
I haven't seen those.
No. It's the only one I found. So, and I had to buy this one in New York. So I actually bought
it. Must be an American thing.
Oh, wow.
One of those souvenir shops that you get. You know those cheap little shops on 7th Avenue in New York. Love them. Okay, we've got quite a lot to do today, including the burning platform at 7 o'clock, which will be fun. I'm looking forward to discussing all the current affairs and all the stories in the news. Just want to tell you that So What Now, our show from last night, a big hit. Lots of people talking about that this morning. So if you did miss it for whatever reason, you can always go and get it online at ENCA today. We had Mzwanele Manyi and Mark Oppenheimer arguing about property rights. And we had Musi Maimane as the guest as well, which was lots of fun. Plus, we spoke to an astronaut, a guy who's been into space for more than a year. He was up there for 500 and something days. A guy called Scott Kennedy.
Wow.
Can you imagine being in space for 500 days? We complain about lockdown. I mean, one of the questions I asked him is, I said, you know, a lot of us are sitting here, we've been in lockdown for a year, but what's it like to be in space for that long? And he wasn't on his own for the whole thing. You know, he was with other people on the mission up there. He went to the International Space Station. But it was really interesting to hear him talk about what they do. And, you know, if you have issues with somebody, let's say you're having an argument with someone in space, I mean, you don't have anywhere to run, right? You pretty much have to make it work.
Oh.
Imagine that.
Oy.
Carl,
but
love
what
to
would you
space.
Argue about? I wonder what you'd argue about. You're at work.
Well, I mean, you might have a personality clash with someone. And because you're in space, there's not a whole lot you can do about it, right?
I feel like that's sorted out long before they leave Earth. Like, that's one of the things. Like, a psychologist comes in and makes sure the personalities will mix and they'll work well together.
Hey, you're there to do a job.
I'm with you, Pumi. You don't have to be friends with everybody. I mean, it's the same. It's the same in any workplace, right?
Job.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm curious also. I'm curious also. Like, if you had to be stuck in space and you could take one thing with you, what would you take? What do you think it would be, Flax? You go first.
Jeez, that's quite a hard question. What's one thing that I like really need? Oh, I'd take like a lot of books. I think that's how I'd buy my time, is through books and just gain a lot of knowledge up there. Other than that, I can't really think of anything I need.
Because remember that everything has to be weighed and accounted for, right? So this guy, Scott Kelly, his brother sent up a gorilla suit for him as a joke. And he wore the gorilla suit when he was recording his videos. And you can still see it on YouTube. He's got some really funny, you know, like you float around in the International Space Station with zero gravity, but he's floating around in a gorilla suit. And the way they could justify it, that's cute, right? It was a birthday present. So what's cute about it is that he could obviously play with this thing, and he could make cool videos and get more people interested in space and all the rest of it. But his brother sent it to him because, A, it was light, and you could use it as packing material for other stuff. So they could, like, wrap the gorilla suit around other things. And then he got it, and it was – I mean, that's a pretty cool thing, but it's not an essential. Like, I think if you took lots of books, that would weigh a lot. Maybe you could have a Kindle.
You have to take your iPod.
Yeah, or a Kindle or audio books maybe, because you could have files. So there's like a USB full of files. That would work.
It's so crazy. Like, you need to send something to like a friend here, you use like FedEx or DHL or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you need to send something to space, the only oak is Elon Musk.
He's the only guy who can help you.
What would you take?
You need to send a parcel here. If it's less than a kilogram, you need to use the post office.
That's true. That was in the news. Really? Yeah. If it's less than a kilogram, apparently you're only allowed to use the post office. They don't work. That's the whole
only
point.
Only the post office.
You're telling me if it's less than a kilogram and I call like DHL or the courier guy, they'll say no.
Yeah.
They can't take it.
They're not allowed to, according to the post
office. They don't have the license.
Yeah.
But the post office won't come collect from your house.
No.
Yes, you must go to the damn post office.
So you must go to the post office for them to lose your parcel because it's under a kilogram.
All you have to do is you have to fill the package with a whole lot of other shit, rocks or whatever you have to. So it weighs more than a kilogram and then the post office don't have to screw it up for you.
Who made this law?
Dumb bureaucrats, Michael Flax. You're going to meet many of them in your life. A whole bunch of people whose job it is to make stupid rules that get in the way of people who are just trying to live their lives. That's what bureaucracies and governments are for.
This one literally doesn't make sense.
It's stupid.
It's like, go to a place that is closed.
Right.
Just keep going to the place that is closed.
Right.
Like, the post office, we know it doesn't work. It's known that it doesn't work.
Exactly.
You lose your parcel, you don't get your parcel.
No, exactly.
That's why we don't use the post office.
It's madness. All right, so...
Maybe we can create one of those petitions.
No, it's not going to help because, listen, the post office is... Who's in charge there at the moment? Because there was that dude who... Mark something or another, he was running it for a while.
Yes.
But now he's gone, hasn't he?
Mark Barnes.
Mark Barnes, that's right. Has he gone? Or is he still around?
Yep. No,
still
he's
there.
Gone. He's gone.
Oh.
Yeah. No, he's gone.
So do we have someone else in charge of the post office?
Ask Stella Ndabeni.
Yeah, because she's the Minister of Communications, right? Oy. She's also the one who, embarrassingly, at the start of lockdown, around this time last year, she was flitting around, stopping for lunch at this one's house, maskless.
In her brand new car.
Yeah, in her brand new car. Oh, yeah. What a class act she is. Stella Ndabeni Abrams. Unbelievable. Didn't the president...
I can remember that.
The president forced her to apologize, right, to the whole nation. It was very embarrassing. She did this groveling apology.
This forcing people to apologize.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. So lots of people commenting and complimenting, Pumi, you, on your new her, which we didn't see last week. There was a different herdo last week. So this is very impressive. Lots of people.
Joy of being a black woman.
Yeah.
You can change it like that. Have different hair.
Damn
every
right.
Every day.
Absolutely.
If you got the time.
Anushka saying, morning guys, haven't watched live in ages, looking great, Pumi.
Love you, Anushka.
Michelle saying, Pums, you're looking hot, mama. Love the glasses as well. There we go. See?
Yeah. I'm wearing glasses this morning because it was hot this morning, so the glasses helped me focus.
The purple frames are nice. I don't see that often. It's very cool.
I've seen those glasses before, but you don't wear them all the time. Are you meant to wear those with reading? Or what? Oh, okay.
I'm actually meant to wear them all the time, like especially with light and screens and driving.
Yeah, I'm meant to have glasses for driving, and they're not. It's not like I can't see, but they do help. It like apparently puts less strain on my eyes. That's why I'm meant to wear them. Flax, you used to wear glasses.
I still wear glasses. The pandemic changed me because I couldn't wear glasses and a face mask, so now I wear contact lenses.
Okay. I wonder how many people have done that.
So I took Kanego to the optometrist. He was also due for new glasses. And this was a new optometrist that somebody recommended to us. And she does a whole lot of tests, like for the muscles. And I have never seen such a comprehensive, like, eye test. And she was just saying so many more of the younger kids because of all the devices.
Yeah,
she's seeing so many more.
I think all these screens are not helping either. We spoke to a doctor just the other day, an ophthalmologist, who's like one of the top ones in Johannesburg, Dr. Rob Daniel, and he was terrific. And he told us that because of screens, so many people are in need of glasses. You know, they have these screens around them the whole time. They're always looking into the screens. That blue light is apparently very bad.
Yeah.
If you're constantly on your screens, it's really bad for you long term. So that's something to think about.
For the kids, because they still have the classroom and the board, which is at the front of the desk of the class,
mm-hmm.
and the distance to the screen is so much closer. So the muscles that you use to focus far and then focus near get hours. Mind blowing.
Yeah, I've heard.
It was like the towel rope.
you discovered something that no one else knew about. Yeah.
So you know how there's like things you don't understand till you actually come face to face and like try it yourself?
Yes, like a towel robe that gets you from the bathroom to the bedroom. I got you.
It's been quite a discovery week. You know how like everyone chirps people that do CrossFit and all they do is talk about CrossFit this? Guys, I tried CrossFit on Monday and I get it. I get why everyone just wants to talk about CrossFit.
Oh,
I get why they call it a community. It is unreal. You just got to try it for yourself and then you understand what is happening. Right, I love it.
So, I mean, do you actually socialize while you're busy training? How does it work?
So, like, people encourage you. Like, people I've never met were, like, saying hello. They were coming to show me what to do. They were, like, while I was running, they would be like, come on, man, come on.
Oh, no.
Like, it's so cool. And then they start adding you to, like, WhatsApp groups for cycling, for running.
Oh, no.
Very motivating people. I love the CrossFit community.
You are doing the opposite of making me want to join. Like,
it proper works. Like, you don't realize, after like an hour training session, your body's broken, but you still have the energy. And like, after a couple of days, it feels like Michelangelo is chiseling your body himself.
No, I hear you.
You see results instantly.
Sure.
Is this you on day four? Is today like your day four of this experience?
Today would be my third session.
And you see, you're already like,
It's a cult.
A friend I haven't heard from in months messaged me the other day and was like, hey, just check the log for who's attending a Friday morning session. Is this you? I'm so excited to train with you. It's so happy you joined. Ugh. I was like, what? This is so cool. No, reconnecting with friends.
Like, this is, I get it. No. I see how it can work for you in terms of fitness and having all those people involved in it, but that is my nightmare. I do not want to talk to other people while I'm training, and I don't want to be part of a community. That stuff is exactly the opposite of what I like in my life. It's horrible. Can I just quickly tell you a story? So it was my little nephew's birthday on Tuesday, right? And
congrats.
Yeah. He's just turned 5, and his elder brother is now 7. So the two of them are... You know, they're really cute and they're very smart and they love their kids. And, yeah, they're awesome children. And the mom said to me, hey, listen, you still have that hoverboard. Flax, we were talking about that hoverboard the other day, remember?
Yeah.
So I've still got it and it works, but I haven't used it for, I don't know, 3-4 years. So she says to me, why don't you, instead of buying him a present, just give him the hoverboard? Because he was on one when we went away the other day for the weekend that this other little girl had, and he loved it. So I thought, okay, brilliant. It'll get some use. It's not just going to sit in the garage gathering dust. So I clean it off.
How old is he?
He's 5, the one whose birthday it was. So I thought, all right, well, if the mom thinks that's a good idea, then it's a good idea. So I go and clean it up. And I check and the charger still works. And I'm like, yes, good. Okay, wrap the thing up in the thing, take it up to their house. I give it to him. He's thrilled. And like his brother is just as thrilled because now they're going to share it and they're going to ride on the hoverboard and it's great. And they took to it immediately, right? So within, I don't know, an hour, the two of them are going forwards, backwards. They're able to turn on the spot, all that stuff. So I'm like, good. This is going to be great. I don't have to worry about them. Well, last night... I get a call while I'm at a birthday dinner for a friend of mine, and it's my sister-in-law, and she's like, listen, can you please just come and babysit the little one, the one who gave the present to, because his older brother has crashed and broken his arm.
Ooh.
So I'm like, oh, for God's sake, I knew this was a bad present. Deep down inside, I was like, maybe they're too young. You know, you always have these things, but you never know. So post facto, I'm like, I shouldn't have given them the present. But so his brother was in hospital last night. He had a little operation to repair. It looks like a fracture. I don't know if it's a complete break,
what?
But it's right on right on the elbow. Yeah, he went for an op. He was in.
One that needed to be opened is a real thing.
No, it's a real thing. So he's going to need a cast for like six to eight weeks. Poor little bastard. I mean, it's awful.
That's a long time for a little person, 6 to 8 weeks. Right?
No, I feel terrible about it now because they were having so much fun on it last night. And I said to them, listen, guys, don't go so fast. But then what do you do?
No.
Pumi, you're a mother of a little boy. You can't stop them,
listen,
right?
Listen, it's not your fault. He could have broken his arm on anything. The gift is a great gift. They love it. And now they know not to go so fast. He could have fallen like down the stairs. He could have fallen out of a tree. Breaking your arm is not a thing, guy.
It's
not your fault.
I know, but I still feel bad about it because shame. I mean, they got back from the hospital at my brother got back from the hospital at about 11 o'clock last night, and she stayed with the kid and. Anyway, it's just a nightmare.
That's so sweet.
But this happened.
You got him a bathrobe. No one's ever broken their arm in a bathrobe.
But it would have been so boring, right?
You don't know that, Flax. You don't know that.
You would have discovered what I discovered at 28 at 5 years old. Do you know how cool that is? Imagine going to school and being like, guys, have you seen this?
No, I don't think there's an appreciation at 5 years old for a bathrobe like you loving it now. You loving it now is the best discovery you've made in a week. But for him, it would have been, ugh. How boring. So, I mean, it got me thinking because I remember I broke my arm when I was at primary school. We were playing during break at school, and we had these huge embankments on the sides of the sport field. And
it wasn't on a hoverboard.
No, I mean, we didn't have stuff like that when I was at school. We had, like, wooden things, you know?
Really?
No, I'm being sarcastic. Right. I'm from the Jurassic era. But we didn't have phones, so there was at least that. But yeah, I
like picturing this wooden plank with like one of those round circles underneath, and yeah, just going like this.
No, it wasn't that bad, Flex. But I fell down the embankment while we were playing some kind of game with a ball or whatever it was, and I broke my arm. And my mother was like, when she picked me up, she's like, "You're just being lazy. You don't want to go to tennis today." And I was like, no. I was like, no, Mom, it's really, really sore. She's like, stop being such a little ass and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, there was no sympathy at all from my mother. So she takes me off to the hospital, and they do the x-ray, and it is broken. She's like, oh, okay. I suppose you weren't making it up. And I had to wear a cast for a while. It's the worst thing. Poor little kid. I feel sorry for him because he's just about to discover how itchy your arm gets
the
under
itch.
A
car.
Oh, my
the
God.
Itch.
That's number one. That's the worst. And, you know, I mean, it heals pretty well after that. But everybody's had a break at some point, right? I was talking to my dad about it, and he said no. He said he hasn't broken. He was touching wood the whole time, like, you know, superstitiously. He said he's never broken a bone. And he's done way more crazy stuff than I have in his life, but somehow he hasn't broken a bone, which I thought was pretty interesting. He's managed to get to like his 60s without breaking a bone. You've got one?
I even have like a plate and pins in my arm.
How did that happen? How did that one
go
happen?
Go-kart racing.
Ooh.
That's a cool story.
It must have been a horrible go-kart situation, racing. Though.
It was all on camera because we were shooting links. I used to host a TV show when I was a teenager, a sports show. And it was all on links, so it was all shot, and it was terrible. But it happens.
When I broke my arm, similar to Gareth's story, I was sort of like running down like sort of a makeshift hill at school.
Yeah.
And I was so fat that gravity was like, nah, can't compete with this, and just smacked me in the back of the head. And then I think I got like 2 steps in on this hill and just started tumbling down. And I was covered in grass with like a broken arm.
Shame, Flex. How old were you then?
I must have been maybe about 16 years old,
wow.
but weighing like 80 or 90 right. kilograms. It was a pie a day, kept the doctor away.
Yes, we discussed the garage pies the other day, and people are still reeling from the shock. We cancelled pies, Pumi. We actually decided we're cancelling
pie
pies.
Pie gate.
Yeah. Michelle says what? That she has never broken
what?
A bone before. So that, you see, there are people who've never broken a bone before.
That's incredible.
Ruth says she fell off a horse and broke her wrist. Later, the back of a bike, broken femur. Such fun, good times. That's sore. Ow.
Mitchell, femur fractures, like tons and tons of pressure to break, and that is the most mm-hmm. painful thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Shame, man.
Femur is also it's a long and quite strong bone, so you really need to have some serious injury to make that happen.
When I was practicing as a paramedic, my first ever call out was an accident, and it was a mid-shaft femur fracture.
Yeah.
And we had to get a traction splint out. And like when I was studying to be a paramedic, they were telling me that like to get a traction splint out and identify mid-shaft femur fracture is very rare. And it was literally my first call, and I called it out in front of everyone. I was like, look, that foot's shorter than the other mid-shaft femur fracture. Let's get a traction splint. And in that moment, I felt like a hero.
Well,
did you feel like George Clooney?
I'm not going to pretend to know exactly.
I felt
what,
like the hero George Clooney looks
yeah,
up to.
I'm not sure I know what you even meant in that diatribe, but I'll pretend I knew. Okay, let's get to some headlines. First things first, there's still endless shit in the Middle East, and we spoke about this yesterday if you want to go and listen to the first hour of yesterday's show. But in Washington, President Biden said he has had conversations with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, and he hopes that the violent clashes with Palestinians will end quickly. He says Israel has a right to defend itself, and he said he spoke to Netanyahu not too long ago. My expectation and hope is that this will be closing down sooner rather than later, but Israel has the right to defend itself when you have thousands of rockets flying into your territory, which is what has happened over the last few days. Biden spoke as calls grew internationally for a de-escalation of violence after intense hostilities between Israel and Palestine that have left dozens dead and hundreds injured. So that's an ugly situation that is, it's not going to quit.
Getting uglier.
Yeah. It's not going to quit. Speaking of quitting, Ellen DeGeneres has called it quits. Her show's finished. On Wednesday,
wow.
Yeah, she insisted her decision to bring the curtain down on her show had nothing to do with allegations in the past year of a workplace environment rife with bullying, racial discrimination, and sexual harassment. But I think that's probably exactly what happened, don't you?
So who's left? Is it just Dr. Phil and Oprah?
Well, the talk has lost Sharon Osbourne. Now Ellen has quit hers. And I thought Ellen's show was, I mean, that was pretty successful, you know. It pulled some serious ratings, yeah. 19 seasons they did of the Ellen DeGeneres show.
Wow.
Yeah, the decision came amid slumping ratings following allegations by former and current staffers that the Ellen DeGeneres show has become a toxic place to work. She's 63 years old. She's won dozens of Emmy Awards for the show. Yeah. And
doesn't look 63.
No, she looks pretty good. She really does for 63. The trailblazing revelation made by DeGeneres' character in a sitcom named after her shocked America and nearly doomed her career when she came out as gay in 1997. On Wednesday, she insisted her decision to bring it down had nothing to do with all those allegations. But I don't know. I think it is pretty much what we think it is. She says, when you're a creative person, you constantly need to be challenged. And as great as this show is, as fun as it is, it's just not a challenge anymore. That's what she told The Hollywood Reporter. Do you believe her?
No.
No, neither do I. Pumi?
Why not? Really? Why not?
No,
you're 63 years old.
I think
just
it's become...
Just down.
Yeah, but,
like, I've been doing this for 19 years. Do I really need this? You know, there's lots of things weighing up. She's just like...
The show's
like
good, though.
It's not worth it. Yeah, but is it worth... Is it worth all the other shit? Is it, you know?
Well, I do think
and
she...
And when you're 63.
Yeah, she's
when
tired.
When you're 63
of
years
tired.
Old, I'm quite sure you're like, listen, I don't need
maybe
this in my life.
Yeah.
Maybe there's like an age where you just stop giving a shit about like other things and you just start focusing on like what you want.
It's probably
like you hit like 70 and you're just like, screw the world, I'm doing what I want.
Probably 60,
I'm no longer
indicating.
It's probably
63. I think that's exactly what's happened is she's tired. She's tired and she doesn't want controversy in her life anymore. She wants to retire now and be happy, or she wants to take up a project that's much less stressful. I mean, listen, doing a daily TV talk show is not as easy as it sounds.
It's hard.
It's really hard.
It's a full day. And then when you're on camera, you're like on everything. You was high energy, hype, and laughing.
Don't they redo things? Like you can stop, pause, redo this if she wasn't smiling enough.
Yeah, they record
them. That's even worse. You have to do it twice.
They record them usually a couple of hours in advance of the airing. Usually they record in the morning and then they'll air it in the afternoon. And it can be hours. Remember, she also has to sit with writers. She has to go through her monologues. She has to work on the games. She has to decide which guests she wants. A lot of the time, these decisions need the presenter involved as well. I know for our TV show, and that's only once a week, how much work it is. Let me tell you something. I would not want to do a daily talk show. It's very hard work.
So do you have to do makeup for your TV show?
Yes.
Christ, what sort of makeup?
If you saw me without makeup, you'd freak out on TV. No, it's just, so what they do, I mean, Pumi, you know about this. You've been a TV producer for years and you've been on TV for years. So what they do is they put some powder on you so you don't shine so much. Because those TV studio lights are pretty hardcore. Plus, what they'll do usually, I mean, for women it's a lot harder because they do your eyes and they do all. So for me, they just put on powder all around, and then they'll sometimes just put some stuff under my eyes because I've got these bags under my eyes and they don't like the look of that. They just try and make you.
What are they putting?
Look a little less horrifying. It's makeup. It's I don't know what kind of makeup. Listen,
makeup.
What I know about makeup, you can fit on a thimble.
Like, if I want to remove the bags under my eyes, like surely there's a makeup for it, like a base or something.
A concealer.
Get really close to the camera, and we'll tell you what you need. Pumi, let's do an assessment. Get up close. Get up close. What do you think we need there,
Michael
Pums?
Flex, you do not need makeup.
No, he probably
doesn't. Someone told me I needed Botox for the sides here when I smile.
I don't think so. You absolutely do not. How old are you? 26.
28. Thank you very much, though.
See, you absolutely do not. Stop it.
Pumi's just done an assessment and you don't need makeup, Flex. How lucky you are. If I went on TV without a little bit of makeup on, and listen, they decide on this stuff. I don't have anything to do with it. They sometimes fix your hair up as well because you don't want to look disheveled and untidy. But it's not a long process. It usually takes like 5 minutes for me, and then it's done. But I mean, girls, obviously, it takes a lot longer, right, Pums?
TV lights and cameras. Yeah. Are brutal because you know you're up front, you're in everybody's face the whole time, and the lights are very, very
don't they heat you up?
Right.
Yeah, it gets warm in the studio too. Yeah, in summer it's unbearable.
Very warm, very
so I'm in that studio, that ENCA studio. I'm surrounded by this screen, which is actually a whole lot of little screens, and that thing is. It's like a wall of light, essentially, from behind. And then you've got the actual, the studio lights coming down on you, too. So it gets really warm. I mean, they've got air conditioning running all the time, but it's still hot in summer. In winter, it's quite nice. It's like a little bit snug.
Do they provide you with dinner?
No.
You're not there long enough to need dinner. What is wrong with you?
But aren't you, what time do you film
this? No, so we film on a Monday afternoon at like lunchtime. So
exactly, lunchtime.
No,
lunch.
There's no time for that. I go into the studio, we start recording at 1, and we have to be out of there at 3. So we only have those 2 hours to make everything happen. And because it's pre-produced and it doesn't go out live, we can re-record things, we can even record one or two things in advance for the next week. So that's the amount of time you've got in the studio. That's what's most important. You don't have time to sit there and eat lunch. Please, man.
Flex, it's not like it's not a fun time. It's work. It's like when you go to work in the mornings, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same experience. You bring your own lunch.
I know, but you're on TV. They must give you like Nando's or something.
Well, what I love about these questions is that these are things, Pumi, that you and I kind of take for granted because we don't think about it. We've been doing this a while. But these are the things that most people are really interested in when it comes to television, right?
So you know who does give you lunch? Like on commercial shoots, because commercial shoots or long form like Igoli or those kind of dramas,
yes.
Right? Because you're there for a very long time. So your call time is like 6 a.m. or 5:30 and you're there till 5:30 or 6 again. You know, that's 12 hours. So
right.
you'll get breakfast and lunch. You'll get dinner. Because you're not there long enough. But it's simply because it is easier and quicker to give people lunch on set than it is for everybody to take an hour off and go and get lunch. It's all about efficiency. It's about time and efficiency.
And every production or movie or whatever you're involved in has a budget. So what they do is they figure out there, well, listen, we need to do 7 solid days of filming. So it's better to just keep people on set the whole day and make sure that they've got something to eat. Anyway. All right.
Also because it's hard work.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Trust me. Especially when...
But you have like a teleprompter in front of you.
Yeah.
Or do you have to memorize
it? Well, no, I mean, what we've done is for the TV show that we do, I'll write that stuff on the Thursday before. And then we perfect it and change it and work the whole weekend to add things and take things away as the stories change. And then by Monday, it's loaded up on the teleprompter. So it's there. I mean, you know what it is because you've written it. But then, you know, they'll kind of roll it to keep you in flow because you don't have time to memorize that stuff. And I'm not an actor. I can't memorize anything. I'm useless. If you ask me to memorize like a 30-second live read, I can't even do that. So there we go. All right.
I think it's quite cool when like actors and people memorize all their lines and that. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's amazing.
Well, actors have to do it.
That's a
actors
real.
Actors don't get teleprompters because it's a real job. And in order to have all the emotions, and it's got to be like a conversation. You can't be like reading. You've got to look in the eyes of the person that you're talking to.
Right. That's absolutely right. Okay, we've got one other headline that I wanted to tell you about quickly. 14,000 inmates have been released on special COVID-19 parole so far, apparently. How do you like that feeling?
In South Africa?
Yeah.
14,000 is a lot.
I think I'm having a sneezing attack because of the 14,000 criminals who are suddenly out in the streets. Well, apparently that's less
surely than... Surely they like petty crimes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, let's go through some of this because it's quite important. So Correctional Services said that as of last month, about 13,989 offenders had been released out of 17,922 perpetrators of nonviolent crimes who qualified for special parole. So these are nonviolent, so they can't be people who are murderers, assault, rape, those kinds of things. So that's pretty interesting. Apparently, our prisons are on average 37% overcrowded. Some facilities are 100% overcrowded. How do you like that? Talk about bad planning. Huh?
And we still have so many criminals out on the streets.
I know.
Does anyone know what sort of food you get in prison? And like if it's breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or if it's breakfast, snack, snack?
I can tell you, and it is disgusting food. It is the worst food ever. We did a show years ago when I was still at 702. We did our morning show from Pretoria, Khosi Mampuru prison, right? And they put us in with all the prisoners in the central, what would you call it, like a lobby. Oh, my God. They brought us breakfast because we didn't stay the whole day, obviously. But they brought us breakfast, which was like this porridge, but it was disgusting. Disgusting. It was bad. And I think you get some bread and butter, straight up bread and butter.
And tea.
So all these people who say, oh, well, prison's too easy. Yeah, go and spend a day in prison. You'll hate it. It's the worst. Anyway, it's the absolute worst. I wouldn't.
Like a tuck shop.
No, there's no tuck shop.
No,
there's nothing.
No, there isn't.
Nothing.
That's why things like chips and sweets are illicit and cigarettes. I like illicit trade in prison. There's,
well, that's what you used to, that's what you used
like
to trade.
Yeah. It's not like a boarding school, Flex. It's not like a boarding school.
The only thing I've seen with prison is Orange is the New Black. So, like, they have a tuck shop. They've got, like, semi-decent food.
You should watch Oz.
No, it's really, Flex, it's not fun, hey? It is not fun.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So, prison.
Yeah, and apparently, so what they have is breakfast, lunch, and supper. They don't get snacks. It's terrible.
What about, like, water during the day? Like,
but
where'd you get that?
You know that it's mass-produced. So if you can imagine that the prison has a population of, what, 500 people or whatever, and if it's 37% oversubscribed or 100% oversubscribed, that food is being cooked for 500 people. So there's no special, like, spice or, you know, gravy. It's got to be mass produced, and it's got. There is a show on Netflix, guys, about prisons, about the worst prisons in the world. You've got to see this. They go to a prison in Lesotho.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I know what's coming. Yes. Go ahead. Go ahead. Tell them the story. This is gross.
And the prisoners cook their own food on open fires.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Outside.
Not good though.
And they have these huge pots and like mealy meal or whatever. And you have got to see the show. Flex, do yourself. There's an education
I'll check
for
it
you,
out.
Young man. There is an education for you.
Woody says you would never say that Flex was fat the way he wants to know about food all the time.
Sure, I used to. I remember some of, like, if I didn't phone Mr. Delivery in a week, they'd phone me.
I got to add Michael, not Michael Flex. Michael Flex is already with us. Sean Saunders to the conversation. Sean, it's good to see you, dude. How are things and what's happening in crypto this week? Sean Saunders, of course, the co-founder of Revix, which we check in with at least once a week, and we haven't spoken to you yet this week, so it's good to see you. What can you tell us, Sean?
Morning, Gareth.
Morning.
It's good to be back. And morning, team. So today's actually seen a bit of a pullback. It's one of those rare weeks over the last 12 months where we've actually seen the crypto market pull back by 10% from the prices yesterday. But, I mean, hell, it got to most cryptocurrencies, when I say most of the top 10, sort of got close to the all-time highs, with Ethereum getting to a new all-time high yesterday.
Yes.
So, I mean, again, another good week overall in the crypto space.
So what are we currently trading at for Bitcoin and Ethereum?
Yeah, so Bitcoin's at $50,900, jumping around it's quite volatile at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's jumping between $50,000 and $52,000. Ethereum's at $3,920.
Okay.
Ethereum got to a high of $4,400 yesterday. So it's been a fairly big pullback. But I mean, across the board, you're looking at sort of a pullback from yesterday of about 10%. But on the week, I mean, most cryptocurrencies are still up, with maybe the exception of Dogecoin. most cryptocurrencies are still up a fair amount.
Yeah. Well, what happened to Dogecoin? Because it's pretty dramatically sunk into nothing, right?
Gee, it's still there?
Yeah. Can you hear me? You can hear me now?
Hang on.
Okay.
Sorry, there was a problem. So just tell us where Dogecoin is currently floating around.
Well, Dogecoin is still in the top five cryptocurrencies. I mean, it's down 30% this last week. it's at $0.45.
Yeah.
Did you see Elon Musk's little skit this weekend?
On Saturday Night Live,
Doge.
Yeah.
Do you think it's sort of sends its price spiraling down? I said before, right? I mean, I came out of the set and being like, do not buy Dogecoin.
Right.
It's ridiculous. It is just a meme cryptocurrency. It literally does nothing. And I got all these messages. It was quite funny. All these people being like, isn't that what all crypto is? Like, it's all just these meme things that do nothing and it's magic internet money. And I'm like, hey, okay, I haven't done my job on the show then. I suppose they're trying to convey exactly what these things are meant to do.
But there are these.
The one thing which is quite interesting to talk about is Ethereum and sort of how Ethereum's blown up over the last a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ethereum was at 3,000 Rand and it got to over 60,000 Rand yesterday.
Jeez.
3,000 Rand 12 months ago and it got over to 60,000 Rand yesterday, which is insane. And Ethereum is quite interesting because it's sort of the second generation of cryptocurrency. So if you think about this, Bitcoin was the first cryptocurrency that came out. I mean, when I got into the cryptocurrency, e-commerce cryptocurrency industry, 5-6 years ago, it wasn't a crypto industry. It was really Bitcoin. And then you started to see these other cryptocurrencies come out. And Bitcoin was meant to do one thing. It was meant to become digital cash without any government. And it was meant to be essentially backed by maths. And that's essentially saying that there is X number of Bitcoin. There's 21 million Bitcoin that exist in the world. There's a certain set inflation rate. That inflation rate is known from now until the very last Bitcoin is produced. You know exactly what's going to happen in this network. You don't have central banks randomly just printing money as the Bitcoin sort of setup, which was really appealing to a lot of people, given what's going on in the world today and what's been going on for the last 10 years or so. And then there was a group of developers, Vitalik Buterin was sort of heading that up. Mm-hmm. And they came out to say, listen, there's a little bit more you can do with blockchain than just transfer information. So great, a blockchain will say, listen, I send you one Bitcoin. This is the date of the transaction. This is the time of the transaction. This is the amount being sent. But essentially with Ethereum, what these developers said is, well, we can include a lot more information in this transaction or in these transactions that occur. So what they did is essentially they introduced this idea of smart contracts and a blockchain that can have programming that can occur on top of it. So all of a sudden, instead of just a dumb payment occurring from one party to another, you're essentially able to include some rule sets. So you're able to say, okay, right, if it is, let's say, the end of the month and Gareth resides in this apartment, let's, you know, authorize this payment from Sean to Gareth.
Okay.
And you essentially create some more logic around money. So all of a sudden, it's not your bank having some debit order functionality. It's actually your money doing that for you.
Right.
And then you go one step further, and that's sort of where Ethereum has been going now. You go one step further and you put a whole bunch of these really small contracts, these little programs together, and you go from having very simple logic to something a lot more sophisticated. So something that launched recently on top of the Ethereum blockchain is called Filecoin. And what Filecoin does is essentially allow you to rent out spare computer space on your laptop. So computer space being hard drive space.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got an extra gig or two lying around, instead of you having to go to Amazon or Microsoft to get new, if you're having to obviously store new data, you can essentially utilize somebody else's laptop. Somebody could pay you to utilize yours. And that's all running on top of the Ethereum blockchain. So the rest of the space, and that's just one example of, you know, thousands of other use cases that are sort of in play at the moment. And that's really why Ethereum's blown up, because all of a sudden people are like, oh, like this thing is like the internet in many regards, except for it's like if the internet was smart. And that's sort of why there's been a lot of money moving into the space now.
I'm fascinated by the story because you've explained it pretty well. But do you think we'll ever reach a point where Ethereum becomes more expensive than Bitcoin? I mean, is that a possibility in the near future?
Well, there's a lot more Ethereum tokens in circulation as things stand right now. So I don't think a token will become more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the belief that Bitcoin will be flipped, as they call it, the flippening, and Ethereum will overtake Bitcoin in terms of market cap dominance. I don't know if that'll be this year, next year, in 5 years' time, but I do see that happening. I mean, if you're just looking at the use cases of what can actually happen on Ethereum, I mean, it's just quite remarkable. But having said that, there is this other big risk that the big next success story isn't going to be Bitcoin, it isn't going to be Ethereum. It could be another cryptocurrency that's introduced into this market. This last week, you saw a cryptocurrency that came out called Internet Computer. I'm not going to get into the specifics of how exactly it works and all the rest, because to be honest with you, I haven't actually dug into it enough. But that went to a $55 billion market cap,
which is larger than
Doge, on its first day of being listed. Why? Because people are going, well, this is actually the next Bitcoin, this is the next Ethereum, this is the next big cryptocurrency. And yeah, sure, it's speculation, but at one time somebody speculated on Facebook, Instagram, you know, all these different plays, and they were right. And that's sort of the big play around looking at the next sort of Ethereum or next Bitcoin.
Sean, are we taxed on profits made from cryptocurrency?
Yes, brilliant question. So many people ask this, and it's like one of the areas we need to dig into more. We are taxed on the profits of crypto. It isn't yet a obligation for Revex or for any crypto platform that you use in South Africa to report any cryptocurrency gains or losses to SARS. However, I'm sure in the future one or 2 years down the line, that'll change. And you'll sort of, as Rebex, will have an obligation. But right now, you have to report your own gains and losses. There's essentially two things I think you have to know when it comes to taxes with crypto. The first thing is if you've held a cryptocurrency for less than 2 years, I mean, the official definition is 3 years, but I think you can get away with 2 years. If you've held a cryptocurrency for less than 2 years and you make a sale, that's deemed to be part of your income tax. So let's say you make 500 Rand profit on the sale of Bitcoin when you've only held it for, let's say, a year. That 500 Rand would be taxed based on whatever your tax bracket is in your personal income tax perspective. If you've held for longer than 2 years, you go into a lower tax bracket, and that's the capital gains tax. I mean, that's hugely simplifying things, but I think that's something important to note.
All right. Well, that's, I'm afraid, all that we've got time for. It's already 7 o'clock, but thanks so much, Sean. It's always good to check in with you, and I hope that that we see an upswing again for those people, like one person who just commented just now on the YouTube feed. Someone said, I just bought 10,000 rands worth of Bitcoin, and now it's sunk by 10%. But it goes up.
One last thing, guys, if you don't mind.
Sure.
One last thing, if you don't mind.
Sure,
this is something I'm pretty proud of, and we were lucky, very lucky to get. Chelsea is playing against Leicester in the FA Cup final this weekend. There's a lot of football fans.
Right.
Revix has been fortunate to become a fieldside sponsor of the game. So
wow. You'll
see over 10 minutes of Revix running around, and you'll see Bitcoin come up next to the pitch and all the rest. Completely sort of lucky opportunity. I wish I could say that we paid that full amount.
That's amazing.
The other, you know, players and sponsors have played. But yeah, you see Revix on TV.
Great.
During the match, and you tag Revix Invest, and you tag Cliff Central, we'll send you over a Revix t-shirt.
Oh, nice.
I'm wearing my hoodie today, but we will send you a Revix t-shirt, which is pretty neat. And yeah, just get in contact with us via customer support channel if you want to chat about that.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks, Sean. That's fantastic. So you can go to Revix.com for more. You can sign up for free today. You can also follow them on their social media handles, which are at R-E-V-I-X, Revix Invest, at Revix Invest on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's Sean Saunders, and you can look out for them in the Chelsea game this weekend. Very, very nice. How cool is that?
Awesome, guys.
Very cool.
Fantastic rest of the week.
Cool, Sean. Nice to see you. There we go. Sean Saunders. So we've got Pumi Mashiro, we've got Michael Flax, you got me, and coming up, The Burning Platform, where we'll be joined by Ebrahim Harvey, and he's written a new book that we're very excited to hear about. All of that and more on the way. This is CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com.